Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Larry Nance Jr. has been traded to the Portland Trailblazers in a three-team deal, sending Lauri Markkanen to the Cavs. This was not something that I expected in any way, shape, or form, but joining me today to discuss it is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
I mean, I'll tell you what, it just feels like, you know, if you think that you know what the Cavs are going to be doing, like, because you got some sauces, you got some friends in the org. Most of the time, reported Cavs deal that gets out does not happen.
Yeah.
And when they do happen, it is like, whoa, I was not ready for that. So, like, maybe we're just not as well-sourced as we want to be, but, like, I never hear this stuff ahead of time.
I mean, Jared Allen, Ricky Rubio, and now Lauri Markkanen. Those were three names that we did not hear. But before those deals happened, they weren't public. Like, not even an inkling of it. And it certainly was a surprise. We had already kind of discussed a little bit the possibility of Nance being traded. And I think you and I were kind of on the same page where we felt, hey, this is a potential option to balance the roster, to add a wing, swap power forward for wing. And that's not what materialized, but instead what we get is a different gamble where you're basically swapping defense for offense in the hopes that Lauri Markkanen can help alleviate some of the congestion that the Cavs experienced last year.
Yeah, I mean, it is not where I thought they were going to go. And I think we should just start with, do we like it? You know, it's kind of a simple question that begets a simple answer, but and then we can kind of take a dive. I don't love it. I'm a little nervous about all the allocations at the forward and center positions right now. Especially people who aren't super that can't really go down. It's not like this team's like the Raptors or something where you got a bunch of 3-4 hybrids.
Like, these are four, the inverse five of the Raptors. It's the inverse of the Raptors. They have everyone 6'9" and not a lot of variety outside of that.
Yeah. So it is an interesting move. I think at its base, the you could almost probably keep it as simple as Cavs wanted shooting. Lauri, best shooter on market. Cavs get Lauri Markkanen. And on its face, I think that's a fine set of reasons. You know, this is a team that has a backcourt that has had a hard time convincing themselves to get up enough threes.
Yeah.
They've got a forward prospect in Isaac Okoro, whose jump shot is a work in progress. And they just drafted Evan Mobley and signed Jared Allen, two players who aren't particularly good shooters, at least it currently stands. You know, we're hoping that Mobley's jump shot develops faster than we think it will. So, you know, you needed a release valve. And again, not to harp on the Kevin Love contract, but that's what Kevin was supposed to do for this team.
Yeah.
Be that veteran presence that kind of stretched the floor for everyone. But that wasn't there. And it's not something the team feels like they can count on anymore. And based on all the evidence, that seems correct. So, you know, he does fit a need, but I am worried about all that money tied up in those positions. Mm-hmm. And frankly, just the fact that I do think Lauri was their best remaining trade chip that they actually wanted to use. And it wasn't used on a small forward. And this is a team that is in pretty dire need of small forwards, though I'm monologuing, so I'll let you respond.
No problem.
But I do think there's some counters to that line of thinking, even if that was my immediate reaction.
Yeah, I still think... So one of my big things is that I'm a little concerned about the ability to add a wing. Chris Fedor did mention that the Cavs are still monitoring the trade market and still looking to get a wing option with other assets. So we'll see as this offseason continues to kind of unravel whether or not they're able to accomplish that. I guess one of the nice things is that Lauri Markkanen alleviates some of the need that you have for shooting, just because now as the third big in the rotation, which is how I see him. Once again, it's pretty much Chris Fedor, because he's covered the hell out of this. But he basically said the indications he gets is that Mobley's going to be the starter, Laurie's going to be the third big, and it's kind of an admittance that Kevin Love can't be counted on it at this stage of his career. If he can give you something, that's nice. But we saw in April with Kevin Love coming into the lineup, what a difference it made for the offense. In the month of April, the Cavs went up to 13th in three-point frequency. Their offense went up to 109. And Laurie's a better player than Kevin Love at this stage of their careers, and a more reliable one. So I think having Lauri Markkanen split his minutes with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, it's going to help make things a little easier for them. It's going to give them more room to operate. It's going to give Garland and Sexton more room to operate. And the other nice thing is, as Mobley continues to develop and we find out more and more about who he is as a player, you have two different bigs in Jared Allen, a traditional center, and Laurie, kind of a stretch four, to get a sense of how he works with different partners. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic moving forward, and a little bit of a way to kind of hedge your bets as you figure out exactly what he is in the NBA.
Yeah, totally. And I do think that it kind of allows you to not feel that impetus to, even if, you know, like for a player, you know, this obviously didn't end up happening, but when we were talking about a guy like Josh Hart for the team, we're like, oh, but he probably doesn't really work because the shooting's not there and they just need shooting really bad. This does allow some optionality on the wing. Like, I mean, this is still a big year for Isaac Okoro's jumper, don't get me wrong, but it's less of a big year, you know? And while Markkanen does come with some pretty distinct downsides, I think they're pretty well equipped to insulate them.
Yeah. The two previous moves, adding Rubio and adding Mobley, are defense-first moves, right?
Yeah, doesn't it feel like Markkanen should play every minute Markkanen's on the floor, Rubio should be on the floor, and vice versa?
I would imagine that, like, if we're talking rotation, I would imagine that Colin Sexton and Evan Mobley are the first guys to sub out for Rubio and Laurie. And
that's interesting, because that's not what I would do.
That would be my assumption, because then you're basically having those guys run the second unit. So you're in a position where Evan Mobley's doing that second unit playmaking from the high post that Nance probably would have done. You're accepting the fact that that's going to come with growing pains. Like, I think Mobley's probably a more talented passer than Nance, but at the same time, he's 20 and he's starting his NBA career. He's going to make a lot of mistakes in those situations. But what I would kind of envision is that your second unit, as the rotation goes along, your four most common guys in that second unit is probably going to be Rubio, Sexton, Laurie, and Mobley. Like, that would probably be my guess, because now all of a sudden you have a point of attack defender in Rubio that's going to help alleviate some of your concerns with Laurie. You have spacing for Colin Sexton in the second unit. I mean, the second unit minutes, just there was no spacing, there was no scoring, and this addresses those concerns in some ways. So that would be how I would anticipate it. I think those guys are probably playing the majority of those second unit minutes.
Yeah, and we're going to be a little scrambled with this podcast. So I realize we probably should still just be talking about Laurie the player and Larry the player and those moves. But with that said, we're here, and we're kind of going all over the place. Yeah. One thing I will say that just occurs to me is that Laurie being on the team allows JB a little JB Bickerstaff a little leeway to play non-shooters of the three, guys like Lamar Stevens, who by every account had a better year than Jetty or Dylan Windler last year. And we were like, well, you know, bummer for Lamar, because he isn't going to get to play because he can't shoot and there isn't enough minutes at the four. Well, maybe there are a little bit more minutes at the three now. Mm-hmm. If Love is getting minutes and you're playing, you know, minutes with Love or Laurie at the four or five. So, you do unlock a lot of optionality. I do think we should talk about just the larger value proposition, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that Larry, for an expensive forward, who, by the way, we wanted last year, both of us.
I wanted him at the trade deadline. Like, it wasn't that long ago.
and, you know, I do feel like for me, the Mobley pick did change my calculus a little bit. Like, this wasn't a team that needed a four long term anymore.
Yeah.
So I was like a little less intrigued by him. Like, do you think the Cavs got good value for Larry? I guess that's kind of the large question. And like, because I think the consensus is that Larry is better than Lauri.
I think Larry is a more impactful player.
Correct.
Larry is a more impactful player than Lauri Markkanen, and I don't think there's any denying that. And that's one of those reasons why I don't love this trade. I see the upside in it. I actually think that this raises the team's ceiling, but I think it lowers their floor. I think the ways that this could go bad.
Another kid on the floor, because he's, I mean, Markkanen's a little older, but he's 24, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's this will be his age 24 season. So it's interesting in that way. I mean, when you're talking about the complete picture and you're talking about the presence of Kevin Love, like, that is obviously awkward. But at the same time, I don't think you should necessarily stop yourself from making moves.
No.
On account of Kevin Love's presence, right? Like, if he's still on the roster at the start of the season, he'll be in the rotation, but he's probably the fourth big. He might have to accept maybe 15 minutes a night kind of thing. Like, that'll be an interesting thing to monitor. But when you're talking about the next 4 or 5 years here, I do think between the 96 minutes that you have at the four and the five, you can get these three guys a lot of time. Lauri Markkanen essentially becomes your
play
sixth
Kevin.
Man.
And while Kevin's here, you're going to have to play him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we can talk about the minute distribution, but on a night-to-night basis, it's going to be what's working, who's playing well, is Kevin giving full effort, is Lauri playing well. Like, there's going to be some competition there, which I think is healthy. But at the same time, it is concerning that you're going from Larry, who, when he was available and healthy last season, really made a big impact on the defensive end, and now you're kind of relying on Evan Mobley a little more on defense than I think you would have.
And he's probably not going to be that good of a defender his rookie year. I mean, that's just, there's no evidence to suggest guys normally are. And you know, I really think the biggest thing that they lose in Larry is, like, this is a team that has plenty of guys who have interesting skill sets,
yeah,
and interesting potential ceilings. Like, what they are, you know, desperately short on is basketball know-how.
Yeah.
And
I mean, this is one less adult in the room, right?
Like, and this
that's
is
concerning.
And, you know, when you were looking at heading to the season of, you know, Rubio and Nance and even maybe Kevin coming off the bench, you go, wow, that's a lot of, like, if you're going to have a team with a starting lineup of 23 or younger, it'd be really nice to have all this savvy behind them.
Yeah.
You know, and where the bench can come in and just be super smart and kind of raise the boats across the board, and they kind of don't have that anymore. Like, it really is. I mean, you look at this bench right now, and let's include Kevin until we don't, because I think that people are just not including him right now, and it's like, I'm not hearing a lot of buyout talks. So it's like,
well, Woj reported there's not interest right now. So I think you can pencil Kevin Love being part of the rotation right now.
So he got to be part of the rotation. So you look at that bench right now, it is Rubio's going to get minutes, Kevin's going to get minutes, Lauri's going to get minutes. Who else?
Yeah.
You know, is it Lamar?
Is it Windler?
Is it Jetty? Is it Dotson? It's going to be a really interesting thing, because there isn't a lot of know-how. I mean, Love being here is actually a kind of, it's weird because the fit is a little worse in terms of the roster construction, because, you know, as a backup defensive group, Lauri Love is, to say Siv is putting it nicely.
Yeah, you're not playing those two together as a four or five. I don't think you ever do.
Probably not. I think you slide Mobley over to the five more.
Mobley probably plays those 18 backup minutes.
18
is
a lot of minutes at the five for Mobley right now, though. They might let Love bang.
But those minutes can come with Kevin Love. Like, you can say, like, I'm not really interested in the distinction, but...
Yeah, I get it.
I think one of Allen or Mobley needs to be on the floor at all times next season. And whether it's with Lauri, whether it's with Love, that'll kind of be determined by game flow, matchups, things like that. Well, so
the point is, like, Kevin actually all of a sudden gets a lot more important to the collective IQ of the team. than I think we thought he was going to be before this deal.
Yeah.
You know, because he is one of the last adults in the room. And sure, we've had, you know, some well-publicized blow-ups, but also he's the only dude who makes skip passes right now and is that connector on offense. He really does kind of like...
I do expect really, Mobley to make those.
Well, yes, I do too. But like, you know, like just veteran savvy. Like, I mean, I've said it 1,000 times, the team just needs to get older. And Kevin can be one of those people who actually like demonstrates that kind of play for this team. So as a veteran group, Kevin gets more important with this deal, not less, in my opinion, which is funny because I think everyone is kind of viewing it as the final, you know, nail in the Kevin Love coffin. And I'm like, oh, well, they still need a smart player and he's still on the team and he's still Kevin freaking Love. So like, and unless the calf has gotten even worse from last season, I think he'll be playing for this team. And
honestly, if it is bad and he has a night off, it's probably going to be Dean Wade filling in.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I will say, like, I do feel like this is probably like, this, if there's a way for Kevin to like the expectations around him are so low at this point that like literally I think anything you get from him is pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and this is a dude who put up like 30-12 on the Celtics in the year. Like
he got us Mobley.
He got us Evan Mobley. So so you know, you just kind of look at the larger picture here, and the team's still weird. They needed a wing, but here's the real reason you shouldn't completely hate it for that reason alone, is that it doesn't appear like there were wings on the market that weren't super flawed.
No, and like,
I don't
if you're
think
looking...
Cam Reddish was gettable for just Nance, and if I had to give up Nance and a first for a guy who hasn't slashed 40-30 yet in his career, I would have lost my mind.
Yeah.
You know, Ingles is old and expiring. It's not
Kyle
really
Anderson shot 26% the two previous years, yeah, and it's
like
an expiring contract.
Seems like Dylan Brooks wasn't going to be available per Job Morant's Twitter timeline. So you just kind of start racking up the names and you go, oh, it's actually pretty hard to pick up a wing at the trade deadline. And like, maybe that makes the Rubio trade look worse in hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not super concerned about it.
Me either.
Because I don't think Torian Prince is like, I think Cavs Twitter is like collectively like misremembering how good Torian Prince was for them. Like he had some good games and then he was hurt and wasn't that good.
Frustrating in other ones, right? Like,
yeah. So it's like, that's who that guy is. So like, you know, I don't think that if Jetty bounces back to his career standards, not last year, then you're probably fine. He's probably like 10% worse than current Torian Prince.
Look at it this way. Like, Damian Dotson played almost as many minutes as Larry Nance last year, and you're upgrading that with Rubio. Like, you look at their top 10 in minutes played. It was Okoro, Sexton, Garland, Allen, Jetty, Dean Wade, Larry, Dotson, Drummond, Prince. Like, a lot of these guys are replaced by better players. Like, Rubio's going to eat up a lot of those Dotson and probably some point Jetty minutes. You're having, like, those Dean Wade, Lamar Stevens minutes. I think, yeah, let me pull this up. Jetty, Wade, Stevens, and Prince played 1,700 minutes at the power forward position. Larry played just over 900. Like, those minutes are getting replaced with Evan Mobley and Lauri Markkanen, which I think is really interesting. And when you're talking about Lauri, like, obviously, when you're committing 4 years to someone that's turning 24, you're talking about some upside as well. And I think some people are kind of misrepresenting exactly what kind of player he is. So these stats are via B-Ball Index. I want to give them credit on the front end here. But they actually had his strongest skill was off-ball movement, then perimeter shooting and his post play. So he was in the 86th percentile in field goal percentage off of cuts. And he was doing that without a point guard. Like, he's played his entire career without a point guard. And that off-ball play is going to be one of the areas where, hey, maybe he can make a little bit of a leap with better playmakers around him. For effective field goal percentage in isolation, he was in the 93rd percentile, whereas Larry in that situation, 18th percentile. And off of cuts, as I said, he was 86th. Larry was 12th percentile off of cuts for field goal percentage. Like, he really struggled in those areas. And then, of course, there's the shooting, where he was 93rd percentile in corner three-point shooting, 53% from three. He contested a ton of shots at the rim, just was not effective at all in it. 89th in contesting shots at the rim, 34 in actual deterrence. So at least he's willing to contest shots. He's just not effective at it. So you would hope some of that would be mitigated by Allen and Mobley. In theory, like, he fits with those two guys, and you have a rotation that makes sense within those three. It's just tough when you're also allocating the resources to Kevin Love, and Kevin Love's presence is there. But I do think that when you're looking at Lauri Markkanen and having such an effective offensive profile, it's clear. This is a big offensive upgrade, but the net in experience, in defense, and what Larry brought to the table, there is a significant downside there as well. So this is the first move that I didn't love that the Cavs made. I see the vision. I understand the upside, and I think it can work. Lauri was someone I was high on. But this is the first real gamble with stakes, I feel, of Kobe Altman's tenure. Like, they didn't give up a lot for Drummond, even trading for the Kevin Porter Jr. pick. Like, one insanely heavily protected second and three others and some cash. Like, there, you weren't trading someone like Larry Nance that was already proven, that is an established known commodity, for a team that needs adults in the room. This is a real gamble. So I'm interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I think ultimately, if you don't like this move, it's for a very good reason. And that reason is, we aren't sure Lauri Markkanen is a good NBA player yet. We aren't sure. We're not sure, Justin. The plus minuses stuff isn't there. The defense isn't there. I'm pretty sure, but I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's 100% useful.
Yeah, I think he's
good is different than useful.
Yeah, at the very least, he's a solid rotation player for sure. I would say the biggest thing with Lauri Markkanen, and the impression that I've got from the outside, is that he's good, but given the skills that he has, given his physical gifts, the way he's able to move around at that size, the way he's able to shoot.
He moves really well, attacking closeouts and stuff. Like, the handle's better than anything. He's
disappointing. Like, that's what it is that his ceiling and, like, what he is thought to be is so much higher than where it is right now. And if the Cavs can even get him to, like, 80% of his ceiling, that's a good contract. Like, he's currently getting that Taurean Prince, Ricky Rubio, Davis Bertans money. And I think, like, he's a much more dynamic player than Davis Bertans. Like, don't get me wrong. He actually does things other than catch up shoot. So for that reason, like, I understand it. I get the process.
I think it would be unfair to not represent why other people don't like it, which is this is a guy who leaves a lot of meat on the bone. And even with Jared Allen, I don't think Jared Allen is a $20 million a year player right now. I think that the Cavs locked him up to a long deal because he's 23 freaking years old.
Oh my God. And it's crazy how young he is.
And is growing in an arc that will say, by the middle of this deal, we're thrilled with it, and by the end of this deal, we're ecstatic about it.
Mm-hmm.
They paid him a little bit on projection. It's not like he's not good now, but they're paying him on projection. I think Markkanen, they're doing that even more. They're basically, this contract to me is saying, hey, Chicago, we think you screwed up with this guy.
Yeah.
We think that you have messed with his development. We think that you didn't keep him healthy. We think you didn't give him good coaching.
You did not give him a point guard ever.
We think you never gave him a point guard. And we got all those things. That's what we think about our organization.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to turn this guy into a player where everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe they only got him for $16 million. And I think the reason that is a little nerve-wracking is that the Cavs are spending a lot on spec right now at those forward positions,
mm-hmm.
like on like the hope that they're going to end up getting good value deals, you know, and that is kind of what you do if you're a team like the Cavs. But like, they're not like locking up guys to like any of these like 4 years, $13 million. Like, it's all like they're spending a lot of money right now.
Yeah.
On and spending flexibility. And you know, I was listening to Fedor's pod and he was kind of talking about like, you know, you don't have to stick with these guys. You can package them. But I'm like, you can't package more than two of them. Mm-hmm. Like, cause you're up to like 35, $37 million pretty quick with any of these names. And there aren't that many players that actually make that much.
Yeah.
So like, I think that's the reason I'm not like it. I do think that if you if you can accept the fact that the Larry market wasn't as robust as it maybe was mid-year, and if it was robust, it was for picks, which I don't really think the Cavs should be in the market for.
No.
Like, that's
picks
the tough
don't
thing.
Come with the upside of what we're seeing here, where it's, hey, the offense got better. Like, there's probably a little bit of a higher ceiling.
And it's just too far out, you know? Like, the Cavs aren't trying to be in the pick business anymore, at least as far as I can tell. So it's like, when you realize that the player-for-player market was not good, it basically comes down to, do you like Lauri Markkanen enough to pay him $16 million a year to be your sixth man? And I didn't like it when it happened. The more I've thought about it, the more I've warmed to it. But he's going to have to be better than what he's been. And that is a little bit of a scary proposition if you're a Cavs fan that's going, well, I just traded a guy I know is pretty good and maybe is beat up a little more than you'd like in Larry, but it's not like Lowry's been the picture of health either, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's like, if I'm trying to get better in this, I want to raise this team's ceiling. It's, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking about this, is Larry's whole value to an NBA team is that he is more than the sum of his parts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's funny about this trade to me is the Cavs are actually kind of betting that Lauri will be more than the sum of his parts, which has never been the case in his career. But because of their specific roster construction, they're basically betting, hey, we think that a guy who can bomb 7 threes a game at 40% as a 7-footer will be the tide that raises all boats for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting bet. You know, I started out hating it. I hate it. I don't hate it anymore, but I don't know if I love it. I think I got to see it. I got to see the guy on the floor. I like watching him play. I do. I think he's, the finishing numbers aren't there, but the finishing attempts are interesting to me. The way he kind of can put the ball on the floor and attack closeouts.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of dudes can't do that.
Off-ball activity and finding passing lanes is really good.
And catching, shooting on the move as a big is really hard. Like, where he'll curl and he'll catch the ball of a curl and fire with his legs under him. A lot of these stretch bigs can really only do it from a stationary catch and shoot position. So he's got all these tantalizing skills, and the numbers just don't really support it yet in terms of like leading to winning basketball.
Yeah,
but you know, the pieces are interesting to me there. I liked Lauri early in his career. I've liked him less as he's gotten older because he's just kind of gotten beat up and it's not been working very well over there in Chicago, but new scenery can mean a lot.
Yeah, it can. And what I like about it is an investment in the guys you've already invested in Mobley and Allen, because I do think he's going to make things easier for
especially
them.
Especially Allen. Allen is going to have some stretches on offense this year where we're like, ugh, come on, man, because the jumper's not there yet. It's not like he's going to have a strength advantage against NBA fours.
Mm-hmm.
And the spacing is going to kind of stink at times with that starting lineup. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Lauri will be like that, like release valve. Like when Lauri comes in and they're running Lauri at Mobley lineups at the 4-5, we'll just all of a sudden be like, oh,
okay, yeah,
let's get this guy a little room to play.
And the other part of it too is, one, like it's an investment in Garland and Sexton too. Like, they haven't consistently had that pick and pop presence. I mean, Sexton got his basically that full year with Love 2 years ago when he was healthy, but Garland wasn't really himself, and he didn't get to play with Love much last year outside of April, where once again the offense was a lot better. They were getting threes up. You're going to learn more about JB Bickerstaff. Like we've talked about, is it personnel or is it scheme? Like now that you actually have a weapon that's going to come off of curls, that is a catch and shoot guy that can do a whole bunch of things, is there going to be more imagination shown in the offense? So I think it's going to be instructive in a lot of ways, and we're going to actually learn some very valuable, useful things because of his presence that we wouldn't have been able to do if it's Larry shooting 2 threes at 36% a game, right? Like this guy that can actually get the volume up there and that may benefit from the guard play that the Cavs have, that's a really, really interesting investment, and it's going to be really, really instructive as you kind of figure out how you want to build with this young core.
I think this is a great, great, great point, Justin, that it's a bit of a chicken or the egg thing with JB's offense right now,
mm-hmm.
because it was not, I mean, it was one of the least imaginative in the league.
Yeah.
And is it because the personnel wasn't good enough or old enough to run good stuff? Or is it because JB has a weak spot as a mm-hmm. coach right now? And I think that from a personnel standpoint, he is much better equipped to do some interesting stuff than he was last year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm just really interested because, like, if Laurie's out there bombing threes in his 25 to 30 minutes a game, whatever he ends up playing, I'd kind of expect him and Rubio to play 25 minutes each off the bench, if I had to guess. But if he's bombing away and Sexton and Garland are taking more threes and Okoro at least becomes like a passable catch and shoot guy, like, what is this offense going to look like? And I think for a young team, and young teams will always make mistakes on the defensive end, investing in the offense and actually giving these guards tools to work with and spacing, that's going to make a real big difference. And obviously the pressure points and the concern is you're now basically asking Evan Mobley to do what you would want Larry to do, which is that playmaking out of the high post to cover for guys defensively. Larry wasn't necessarily a point of attack guy, but he was really good off ball. I don't think Mobley is going to be a great off ball help defender. That's probably the weak spot in his defensive game right now, but for he's sure. a little better at point of attack. So there's a lot of changes that are being made. But I do feel better about the offense than I did before this trade happened. I do think this is unquestionably an upgrade on the offensive end of the floor. It's just
say one other thing that like is a little bit, I don't know if it's a bummer, but it's just a change. I think we kind of were starting to wrap our heads around the idea of like, this is going to be a team that kind of starts to need to win with its defense,
mm-hmm.
like between Nance, Mobley, Allen, Okoro, like that front court was looking really, really stout there.
Yeah.
Looks a hell of a lot less stout on defense. This is going to have to be a team that wins by being solid on both ends now.
It is going to need to be both ends. I don't know how much of a defensive drop-off it is from last year, just because
Larry played so few minutes.
He played so few games, and then the second half of the year, like, he was never right.
Yeah, but Lamar and Dean are actually pretty capable defenders.
I would expect Mobley to be better, and that's going to be the big question. And does Rubio being there instead of Damian Dotson and Broderick Thomas at the point of attack?
But even then, Justin, you're going from, like, I thought their defensive play at the back of five was pretty good last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought Hartenstein did pretty well. I thought JaVale
did well,
much better than I thought he would. And like now, you're pretty much playing mostly a three big rotation with some Kevin sprinkled in on nights he's up for it.
Yeah.
And two of those dudes are Kevin Love and Lauri Markkanen, and one of them is a rookie.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. I think that the defensive floor is definitely lower on this team than it was before. It was heading into this season after the draft.
Yeah, no, I
thought there was a road to them kind of just being that try hard team that just locked people down on defense, and it's still there, especially in that starting lineup, but there's a lot more holes in the dam to plug now. And that's okay, because you should argue that you got enough back on offense to make it functional, but it's just worth noting that this team might have moved a little bit away from at least an easily identifiable identity and mm-hmm. path to go towards. Maybe that's still JB's plan. Like, hey, we're going to turn you into a serviceable defender.
Yeah.
But, you know, we haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, no, and I think it's balancing the attack, right? Like, now it's going to be a little more of a mix in offense and defense. And, I mean, you want an entertaining product. Like, some of that, like, factors in for me where I get some excitement now seeing, okay, like, I can see if Garland's making the leap that I expect and Sexton's going to get better, like, it's going to be pretty fun. There's going to be moments where this offense is really clicking next year and it looks like a lot of fun. Then there's going to be nights where the inexperience is really, really showing. That average age of like their top six guys in the rotation is basically like 21, 22. Like that's going to be a really interesting thing. But I mean, they obviously losing Larry Hurts. Like that's the one part that isn't fun. This is a business. I think personally, I take some comfort reading his letter that he wrote in Cleveland.com today, talking about, hey, but this was a collaboration. It was a joint effort. I came to Kobe, and I understand where he's coming from there, because you didn't really have an opportunity to be a starter here in Cleveland. Like, you're behind Kevin Love.
The team is so good that it's worth it for him, you know?
Yeah. It's and then all of a sudden Evan Mobley gets drafted, and okay, he's probably the long-term four. So your role is probably a little diminished there to some extent, and you're going to be 29. Like, you want to compete. You want to make the most of your best years when you're healthy, especially when you have had injury concerns. So I understand it for both sides. This is certainly a gamble for the Cavs. We'll see if they can address the concerns on the wing. That's probably my biggest thing. Like, I think the big man rotation is going to work out. I just have concerns about how many bullets they have left in the chamber to go out there and add a wing. And maybe you're stuck kind of hoping that those 20 minutes that Okoro isn't playing at the three, that Dylan Windler, who was serviceable at one point last season, or Jetty Osman can kind of return to form to some extent. Like, we're not talking about a ton of minutes.
I think he got 30 minutes to fill per game. That is my theory, because you got about 20 of the three, unless you play Isaac another 38 minutes a game or whatever. Mm-hmm. Nah, I don't want to turn the guy into Luol Deng.
Yeah.
And then you got 8 to 10 at the one and two, at the two, I think.
Two. Yeah. I think I kind of figured it out that if Garland and Sexton are playing 32 and Rubio's playing 25, it would be 7 minutes at the two. So if Okoro plays those 7 minutes there and 25 at the three, then that leaves 23 minutes, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think in practice it's gonna be closer to 30. I think those numbers are maybe a little high.
Yeah, they might be. And again, they're going to vary on a night-to-night basis. Yeah. Like, these guys are going to have to go out there and earn it.
And what if someone gets in foul trouble? You know, like, what if someone gets banged up? Like, their margin for error on those spots is very, very low right now. But it does seem like just no one's selling, you know? Like, man, could you imagine if the Cavs had gotten Grayson Allen for 2 seconds and some flotsam? Like, that would feel great, you know? And that's not even, like, an elite player or anything. But, like, they need innings eaters, man.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Like, just a more established option that would make me feel more comfortable, because
I can't shake, man. I know everyone's just done with Jetty and frustrated after, I mean, by far the worst season of his career, but I can't help but think, why are we so sure that's the new norm for him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I was fine with him.
The year before, he was very solid. Like,
he was serviceable. He wasn't great, but he was serviceable. And that's what the Cavs need. In these minutes.
So, yeah, like, I'm just not comfortable, like, counting on either he or Windler, either, but I can see the path for both of those guys having an impact.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm comfortable with it. I'd like them to keep chasing, but, like, I think the assumption is that they will get very, very bad play in the wing,
mm-hmm.
and I think that there's a chance it is serviceable.
Yeah, I think so, too, and I think it is a little easier when you do have Laurie, right? Like, in that second unit, like you said, you could play Lamar Stevens if those guys aren't giving you what you're hoping, and you're at least getting defense with them, right? So there are a lot of questions that remain. This is very, very interesting. This is going to be one of those defining moves of Kobe Altman's career. So we'll see how this plays out. I've got nervous energy. I don't know how this is going to go. I see the path to it working. I see the concerns. I have some of those concerns. But I do like that the offensive ceiling has been raised. And, I mean, in a lot of ways, Larry was kind of a luxury when it comes to, okay, if you're already invested in Allen and Mobley, the things that Larry is going to bring to the table, that playmaking, like, you want to give those reps to Mobley, even though he's going to make more mistakes, because that's your long-term investment. So I understand the logic behind it. It's just going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. Any more final thoughts before we wrap this thing up, Carter?
No, I think I'm excited to see Larry. That is going to be fun, is that, like, almost every second on the court, there's going to be a young player. Two to three young players that we're pretty excited about. And very
core six, baby.
In.
Core six, baby.
Like, our intellectual curiosity is going to be, like, there won't be a lot of games where there's nothing for me to watch. Even if things aren't going well,
mm-hmm.
early on, it's like, how does Lori look? How does Darius look? How does Colin look? And it's like, there's just a lot of intellectual curiosity I have around this team right now.
Yeah, me too. This is going to be one of the most interesting seasons ever. This is a lot of young talent, and we're going to see how they click. It's going to be really, really interesting to see who gets used, how they get used. I just think now there's more kind of tools in JB Bickerstaff's belt, and we'll see how he uses them. But I want to thank all of our listeners for supporting the podcast. I'm sure you guys are as fascinated with how this is all going to work out as we are. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cats.